Nemoto presents scientific giants. Barbara McClintock, the cornfield, and the jumping gene. Narrated with Microsoft Azure using the Ava voice. Running time, approximately 13 minutes. You're listening to scientific giants who changed the world. Each episode stands beside one mind and follows a thread of curiosity until it ties to the world we inhabit. Today we meet a scientist who worked in fields rather than fashionable laboratories, who trusted what she could see even when the world told her it was impossible, and who proved, decades ahead of her time, that the genome is not a static blueprint. It is a living text that can cut, paste, and rearrange itself. Her name is Barbara McClintock, and her discovery of jumping genes is one of the great demonstrations of what happens when a mind refuses to look away. Barbara McClintock was born in 1902 in Hartford, Connecticut, and grew up with a temperament that never fit easily into the social expectations of her era. She was independent, intensely focused, and suspicious of anything that smelled like conformity. From the beginning, she had the kind of attention that does not merely observe. It inhabits. She could look at a problem for a long time without boredom, because for her the world was always revealing itself, layer by layer, if you had the patience to stay. She studied at Cornell University at a time when women in science were still treated as anomalies, permitted, sometimes tolerated, rarely welcomed as equals. Cornell, however, became a place where she could train seriously. She entered the world of genetics through a plant that would define her life's work, maize or corn. To some, corn is just a crop. To McClintock, it was a universe of variation, a living system where heredity could be read with the clarity of a skilled eye. Corn has a particular advantage for genetics. It shows visible traits in kernels themselves. A single ear can contain hundreds of kernels, and those kernels can display different colors and patterns depending on genetic changes. You could, in effect, see heredity painted across an ear of corn. But seeing is not the same as understanding. The patterns were clues, and McClintock wanted to read them as evidence rather than decoration. She was not only a geneticist in the abstract sense. She was also a master of cytogenetics, the study of chromosomes as physical structures. In the early 20th century, genetics and cytology were converging. Mendel had given laws, Morgan had mapped genes to chromosomes, but the field still needed people who could track chromosomes under the microscope with almost artistic precision. McClintock became one of those rare people. She developed methods to stain and visualize maize chromosomes in detail. She could identify individual chromosomes by their shapes, knobs, and structural features. She could watch them during meiosis, see how they paired, crossed over, broke, and rejoined. This sounds technical, but it is essential to her story. McClintock's genius lay partly in her ability to connect the visible movements of chromosomes to the visible traits of kernels. She treated the cell as readable. She believed the genome had behavior, and she wanted to learn its grammar. One of her early major achievements was demonstrating that crossing over, the exchange of chromosome segments, could be observed cytologically and connected to genetic recombination. This was a profound step. It turned recombination from an inferred process into a visible event. The genome was not just a set of abstract units, it was a physical object that could exchange parts. But McClintock's greatest discovery emerged not from confirming what people already believed, but from seeing something that did not fit the existing framework. Her work on maize kernel coloration led her into a strange territory where genes seemed to turn on and off unpredictably, where traits appeared in mosaic patterns, where the same genetic line could produce kernels with wildly different pigment arrangements. Something was happening inside the genome that the standard view could not explain. At the time, genes were often imagined as fixed points on chromosomes. They might mutate, yes, but they stayed in place. The genome was a stable map. That stability underwrote the confidence of early genetics. McClintock began to suspect that the map itself could move. She identified two genetic elements that she called dissociata, or DS, and activator, or AC. These names sound like functional poetry, and in a way they were. DS seemed to cause chromosome breakage at a specific site. AC seemed to control whether DS could act. The behavior was not simply a gene makes a trait. It was an element causes a structural event in the chromosome, and another element regulates whether that event occurs. As she followed these elements, she realized something even more disturbing to the prevailing view. DS could change its position. It could move to new locations on the chromosome. When it moved into a gene that controlled pigment production, it could disrupt that gene and turn pigment off. If DS later moved out during development, pigment could be restored in that cell lineage, producing a patch of color. This created the mosaic patterns, the spots and streaks that had drawn her attention. In other words, the genome was not only a set of instructions, it was a system capable of internal rearrangement. Genes could be interrupted by mobile elements. Regulation could involve physical movement of DNA segments. The genome behaved less like a static blueprint and more like an ecosystem. This is what we now call transposable elements, or transposons, segments of DNA that can move from one location to another. McClintock discovered them in the 1940s and early 1950s, decades before molecular biology could easily confirm the mechanism. She did not have DNA sequencing. She did not have the tools to see the exact nucleotide changes. She had corn, microscopes, breeding experiments, and a mind that could hold complex patterns without flinching. The scientific community did flinch. McClintock presented her findings, and many geneticists did not know what to do with them. The dominant intellectual mood favored tidy models. The gene was a stable unit. Regulation was poorly understood, but it was imagined as something like a switch controlled by fixed loci, not by moving DNA. McClintock's ideas felt too dynamic, too strange, and perhaps too dependent on her unique interpretive skill to be easily reproduced by others. Some dismissed her work as overly complicated. Others simply set it aside because it did not fit the questions they were asking. This is one of the most revealing moments in scientific history, not the resistance of ignorance, but the resistance of a community's conceptual habits. It is not that her peers were stupid. It is that their framework could not comfortably hold what she was showing. The discovery arrived before the culture had the mental container to carry it. McClintock, however, did not collapse under this lack of recognition. She continued to work, but she also withdrew from the fight for immediate acceptance. She had an unusual relationship to validation. She wanted truth, not applause. She believed the organism itself would keep confessing its secrets, and she trusted those confessions more than professional consensus. Over time, the field moved. Molecular biology emerged. The gene became DNA. Regulation became a central obsession. Scientists began to realize that genomes contain large amounts of DNA that do not code for proteins, and that this DNA is not inert. In bacteria, transposable elements were discovered. In eukaryotes, too. The idea that pieces of DNA could move was no longer ridiculous. It became a major theme. And suddenly, McClintock's cornfield work looked less like an eccentric corner of genetics and more like a foundational revelation. It became clear that transposable elements are everywhere. In many organisms, they make up a significant fraction of the genome. They can create mutations, alter gene expression, reshape genomes over evolutionary time. They are one of the ways genomes innovate and one of the ways genomes become unstable. They are both creative and dangerous. In 1983, Barbara McClintock received the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine for her discovery of mobile genetic elements. By then, she was in her 80s. The recognition arrived, but it arrived late, like a delayed echo. It did not change what she had been all along, a scientist who could listen to living systems at a deeper frequency than her era was prepared to hear. Her story is also inseparable from her method. McClintock believed that to understand an organism, you have to develop a relationship with it. She spoke about having a feeling for the organism, a phrase that makes some modern scientists uneasy because it sounds mystical. But what she meant was not superstition. She meant intimacy with complexity. She meant the ability to anticipate patterns because you have lived with them long enough that they become familiar, not in a lazy way, but in a deeply attentive way. She treated Korn as a partner in communication. This is an important corrective to the myth that science is purely mechanical. Science is also a human art of attention. There are discoveries that require not only technique, but a temperament capable of staying with ambiguity until it resolves. McClintock had that temperament. So, how should we remember Barbara McClintock? We should remember her as the woman who showed that genes can move and that genomes can behave. She revealed that heredity is not merely transmission, it is also rearrangement. She forced biology to accept that stability and change coexist inside the same organism, inside the same chromosome, inside the same developmental process. Her discovery deepened our understanding of mutation, evolution, and regulation. It also reshaped how we think about junk DNA, showing that what looks useless can be active, mobile, and influential. We should also remember her as a case study in delayed recognition. McClintock's life reminds us that scientific progress is not only about data accumulating. It is also about framework shifting. A discovery can be real and still not be absorbable until the culture of science changes enough to make room for it. If you want a final image, picture an ear of corn with kernels in different colors, patches, and speckles that look like art. Then picture McClintock seeing those patterns not as decoration but as evidence, as the visible handwriting of the genome rearranging itself during development. Picture her alone, season after season, making crosses, recording results, peering into cells, and trusting the organism more than the crowd. You have been listening to Scientific Giants Who Changed the World. Today, we followed Barbara McClintock from Cornell's laboratories to the cornfields, from chromosomes as stable carriers to chromosomes as dynamic systems, from a discovery that arrived too early to an eventual Nobel recognition that confirmed what she already knew. In our next episode, we will meet Alexander Fleming, whose accidental encounter with mold opened the antibiotic age and transformed medicine. Another story where attention to an unexpected pattern changed the fate of millions. Until then, thank you for your attention and your time. This episode was written as a continuous story for the year because McClintock's life cannot be captured as a single fact. It has to be experienced as a slow unfolding of seeing, patience, and courage until you feel how a cornfield can contain a revolution in how we understand the genome itself. By Nicholas Osterman.